Joining me now on the phone is my good friend and colleague, Monique Garcia. She's the House correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. And as if we haven't had enough busy weeks in Illinois politics, we've got another busy week ahead with Governor Rauner delivering his budget message on Wednesday. Monique, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So we've kind of heard the governor lay out a concept of what he intends to propose. He says he'll propose a balanced budget. That would be the first time that he would have done so. He says that he will propose a way forward that would reduce the state's personal income tax rate down to 3% over a phase-down period. He says that he's going to propose these things, but no one's quite sure how he can do it.
Right. It's an ambitious plan from the governor. Just last week, his new budget chief was testifying before lawmakers and kind of laid out just how bad things are. Hans Zygmunt, the new budget director, said things have stabilized a little bit since lawmakers put in place the tax hike and the budget plan over the governor's veto, but that, you know, the books are still just covered in red ink. Right now, they're estimating that their goal is to try to close a $9 billion shortfall that exists currently. That includes a bill backlog of about $8 billion and another $1 billion or so that the Rauner administration spent trying to keep prisons open and keep public health programs running in the absence of a budget. How you get there is very difficult, especially if he wants to roll back portions of the tax increase. Democratic lawmakers say they look forward to finding out how the governor would be able to do this, given that we don't have an extra $9 billion lying around.
Yeah, and I think that's the big question, because this is we're still playing catch-up over that two-year budget impasse.
Absolutely. During the impasse, you know, I think everybody was kind of shocked about how the state could operate. And the way that they did that is by running up the credit card. I mean, we had at a high, I think, about almost $20 billion in debt. And we're still paying that down. I mean, the state borrowed billions of dollars to kind of refinance that last year. So we'll be paying that off for years to come. And it's important to note that this debt doesn't just sit there quietly. A lot of it by itself accumulates extra interest rates. So you have the debt racking up, I think the last estimate was about $1 billion in interest rates, too. So there's a lot of catch-up, and there's a lot of concern about whether or not the governor's going to propose some more cuts, as he tends to do, to try to cover that debt. But he's even acknowledged that cutting is not as easy as it sounds. When the lawmakers passed the budget last year, he said at that point there was about a $2 billion shortfall. That now, they say they've been able to close that to closer to about $600 million through a combination of cuts and borrowing from other funds. So they've acknowledged that they've only been able to cut a few hundred million. There's not a lot of wiggle room there.
And a lot of, as we learned through the impasse, a lot of the funding is done really through court order. So if you do attempt to cut something, it can't be done unilaterally.
Right. Your hands are tied on a lot of this stuff. There are court orders that protect the agency that oversees child welfare. There's some court orders for some groups that provide health care for disabled and developmentally disabled people. So there's not a lot of areas where you can just kind of take the pen and start slashing.
We're speaking with my Tribune colleague, Monique Garcia. She's the State House correspondent for the Tribune down in Springfield. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, speaking with my Tribune colleague, State House correspondent Monique Garcia. Monique, we've got the budget message coming up on Wednesday. Of course, Governor Rauner, in the midst of a reelection campaign, finding a primary challenger with Jeanne Ives. And obviously, in the past week, the Ives television ad that characterized her view of life under Bruce Rauner, involving transgendered people, women seeking abortion rights. A commercial that sparked outrage, obviously, from those affected groups, but also from elements of the Republican Party itself. But at the same time, here was a candidate, a three-term state representative from Wheaton that most people had never heard of, and now she's running commercials that say, well, now I've got your attention.
Right. And so it's important to note that this budget speech doesn't come in a vacuum. It's very much a precarious political time for the governor, where previously in his speeches, he could almost uniformly count on support from Republicans. But now you do have a challenger in Jeanne Ives, who's really tried to motivate and to try to mobilize conservatives who are upset by some of the actions the governor has done. And you'll note that this week we've kind of seen a shift in the governor's approach to Jeanne. For a long time, he kind of ignored her on the trail, called her a fringe candidate, has even said more recently that he's unelectable. But this week, he went on the attack against her and released a new ad where he's going after her and attempting to tie her to House Speaker Michael Madigan.
It seems like that's a one-size-fits-all strategy from the Rauner camp.
It sure does, and I think it works. He doesn't think it's about his leadership, and that has been a criticism of Jeanne Ives, is that he continues to use Mike Madigan as a scapegoat for failures in his own leadership. She has said, look, I'm able to work with the speaker, which the governor has criticized. And she said, I don't think that we can blame him for everything that's going wrong. When you're in that top office, it's your job to navigate these political minefields and find a way to get your agenda done. And the governor simply hasn't done that, she says.
Well, and it's, I look at it as, she's up trying to appeal to a certain base, and that the ads do represent her base and her beliefs, and the question being how big a base that is. But on the other hand, with Bruce Rauner, there's the open question of what is his base.
Right. I'd note that after his State of the State speech just a week or so ago, we were trying to find folks in the building at the Capitol who would speak highly of him, and it's getting increasingly difficult to do so. There are Republicans who do stand by him, most notably Senate GOP leader Bill Brady. But in terms of voters and what they've really gotten out of this administration, it's difficult for them to quantify that with Governor Rauner.
Well, and I think, we kind of saw elements of this, too, during the budget impasse, where the question being is, at what point is there a disconnect between the Republican members in the General Assembly who have been heavily dependent on Rauner's personal wealth in supporting campaigns and supporting Republicans, but is there a disconnect there to when they actually have to go back to their districts, and what do they have to show for the past 2 years?
Absolutely. And a lot of lawmakers have said, we don't need the money anymore. The money is nice, but it's not keeping me from getting beat up when I go home, and universities are cutting, social service agencies are shutting down, and we've not been able to put in place things we've promised them, like lowering property taxes or putting in term limits or doing things to help businesses. We've not been able to accomplish that. So at what point do we have to start making votes for what's in the best interest of our district versus what's in the best interest of Bruce Rauner and the Republican Party?
So we are in this election season. We have the governor giving his budget message, and we have the governor raising the issue of whether Madigan just wants a stalemate on a budget so that the state goes back into a budgetless kind of cycle for political purposes. Now, that's something that the Democrats deny. But nevertheless, you have to wonder if that there isn't some calculation there another budget impasse is inevitable.
Sure. I, I don't think you'll find anybody who says they want another one, but I don't necessarily think that means that this process is going to be easy moving forward. Crafting a budget is difficult in any year, not to mention a year we're coming out of the impasse and where Republicans joined Democrats to put the budget in place over the governor's veto and heading into an election. So I think we're still going to have some drama and some fireworks here. It's not going to be smooth sailing by any means on either side. So it's really kind of a wait-and-see game right now that's got a lot of people's stomachs in knots, quite frankly.
Well, and then, you know, each legislator has their own kind of special constituencies. And, you know, you look at the budget that was recommended for higher education by the State Board of Higher Education, which didn't really go as far as necessarily public institutions wanted it to go. They wanted it, I think, to go back to kind of the pre-impasse funding level. But I can still see individual rank-and-file legislators from university communities kind of pushing for even greater higher education spending than what was recommended.
Absolutely. And they'll point to damage that was done during the impasse and say, now is the time that we need to be investing. We've seen attendance dropping at universities. We've seen more students enrolling out of state, and they will say that this is the time that we need to be putting money into those institutions to stop that, to stop tuition hikes, to stop people from going out of state. And you'll see that argument, too, in K-12 education. They just put in place a new funding formula that aims to put more money into the system, specifically to help lower-income school districts, including CPS. And they'll say, we need more money for that. There's always a need for money. There's a question of where that money comes from.
And what may have to be on the chopping block to try to get there to those kinds of goals. And budget speeches presenting a budget is presenting a reflection of priorities.
Right, and the governor year after year has targeted some similar groups. He targets some of these social service groups that provide drug treatment or provide help for the homeless. And these are areas that aren't protected by those court orders, so they're, I wouldn't say easy for them to cut, but that he's able to cut unilaterally on his own. And so you're going to see a lot of pushback from those groups who are going to try to preserve what little money that they've been able to get in the last couple of years.
A lot to look forward to on Tuesday evening and Wednesday when the governor delivers his budget address. Monique Garcia, State House correspondent for the Chicago Tribune, as always, thank you so much. We've got a lot of work out of us.
We sure do.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.